Welcome to the Husband Material Podcast, where we help Christian men outgrow porn. Why? So you can change your brain, heal your heart, and save your relationship. My name is Drew Boa, and I'm here to show you how. Let's go. Today, we have an extended interview with Benji Nolo. Benji is the founder of Exodus Cry, a nonprofit committed to breaking the cycle of sexual exploitation while assisting and empowering its victims. Today's conversation gets explicit, so I want to give you a trigger warning. It could be a little bit uncomfortable for you. We're talking about very difficult things, but Benji provides so many inspiring stories and amazing wisdom that we need in order to end sexual exploitation, to end sex trafficking, and to really stop porn from continuing to destroy the lives of women and children. Benji is an award-winning filmmaker and a modern-day abolitionist driven by the conviction that every person should be free. Benji, welcome to Husband Material.
Thank you. Good to be with you, Drew.
Yeah, it's great to be with you. What else do people need to know about you?
Oh, man. I don't know. I think for me, it's more about the work that we're doing that's important. We have a great team at Exodus Cry. We've been fighting human trafficking for 15 years now. And I always am, you know, excited for the opportunity just to share about that work because we think it's really important.
Why are you so passionate about modern day slavery and this work you're doing with Exodus Cry?
So for me, it goes back quite a ways. I grew up in Southern California, youngest of four kids. And for that reason, I think was a little bit more sheltered in my growing up experience. But when I was 11, I saw a movie called The Accused with Jodie Foster. And this movie depicts the gang rape of a woman named Cheryl Arroyo. So it was a real story that they did a movie about. But this woman, Cheryl Arroyo, she was actually gang raped in a bar by four men for 2 hours while other patrons stood by and cheered. And so the movie depicts that scene. And at 11 years old, I had, you know, like I said, somewhat of a sheltered upbringing. I think for me, like that experience was what awakened me to the knowledge of the presence of evil in the world. And at 11 years old was difficult to like reconcile with or process, but it definitely had a visceral impact on me and really caused me to believe at a very core level from a young age that rape has to be the worst thing that could happen to a person. And so that haunting feeling was always with me throughout my upbringing. And in 2007, February 3rd, 2007, when I discovered human trafficking for the first time, all those feelings as a child came back, just the realization that this idea of like somebody being raped was not one, a one-off here or there, but they're actually hundreds of thousands, millions of predominantly women and children who are being forced into a lifestyle of systematic rape around the world. The sudden, you know, awareness of that was so overwhelming to me. And it pierced my heart with the injustice of that. And so for 9 months, 8, 9, 10 months, I just immersed myself in prayer and study, trying to understand everything that I could about this problem. And then fall of 2007, a woman approached me and said, you know, you don't know me. My name's Gloria. I'm a widow. God has told me to give you $10,000 to start an organization to fight human trafficking. And so that was the catalyst to sort of put feet to my prayers and actually begin to step out in forming a response to the injustice of human trafficking in a more formalized way. So we started an organization called Exodus Cry. And then I set out on a journey initially to just make a documentary to help kind of understand what was going on and also to like tell the story of human trafficking. And so that was, yeah. So to your question in a more direct way, I think that it was my journey of, you know, that that moment as an 11-year-old, really having this like worldview established in me of the horrific injustice of rape. And then later finding out human trafficking, yeah, just spawned in me this deep passion and also like a deep sense of anguish, over the reality of what's happening in our world. And then a correlating passion to stop it, to end it, and to bring change to our world. And so that's been my journey for the last 15 years.
It sounds like real life encounters with the human beings behind the scenes of pornography has had a huge impact on you. And it really all starts with awareness. So for those of us who are not aware or who are just kind of aware, what is sex trafficking?
On my journey of making Nefarious, I began to see the many faces of trafficking and the way that it operates uniquely in different parts of the world. For example, some countries are source countries, some countries are destination countries. In Eastern Europe, for example, you had a huge crisis after the fall of communism of parents leaving countries like Moldova in search for work abroad, created a massive social orphan crisis. And then traffickers rushed in and preyed on the vulnerability of those young orphans, pulling them into trafficking situations. So
Eastern Europe would be a source country or source countries over there?
Correct. And then you go to countries in Western Europe, you know, the Netherlands, Germany, Spain, where you then see, or Dubai, where you see like all these Eastern European girls for sale in red light districts. So those are like more destination countries. So it operates differently in different parts of the world, but ultimately the best way to understand human trafficking is the exploitation of vulnerability. And what we deal with is sex trafficking. So the exploitation of vulnerability unto sexual exploitation for economic gain of the third party entity, whether it be a pimp, a brothel owner, a trafficker, strip club owner, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And so we have observed that, we've investigated that, we've researched that in pornography, stripping, prostitution, places all over the world. And like I said, it looks different in different places, but it's the exploitation of vulnerability at the end of the day is what it is.
So what is the relationship between porn and sex trafficking?
Pornography's role in this, in my observation, overlaps in four primary areas. So it was really on my journey of making our first documentary, Nefarious Merchant of Souls, that I began to see the role of pornography in this. So again, my first impression and understanding of human trafficking is somebody abducted, gang raped, put in a dog kennel, prostituted out. That was my idea of trafficking. So I first saw it through that very narrow lens. And then as I began to travel the world, began to see the bigger picture and the overlapping issues. So in 4 years, I ended up traveling across four continents, 19 countries and 42 cities, documenting the rise of this global phenomenon of sex trafficking. That documentary, again, is called Nefarious Merchant of Souls, and it's available on our Exodus Cry YouTube channel for anybody that would want to watch it. The first thing that we observed is pimps, brothel owners, traffickers using pornography to advertise the women for sale in red light districts around the world. So literally individuals who either ran the brothel or worked for the brothel or the prostitution window or whatever the prostitution context was, had pornography of these girls and would stand in these red light districts and hand them out. This happens in Las Vegas as well. They hand it out and then you can go have sex with that person. So that was the first thing, prostitution being used to market trafficking. The second thing is that in talking to human trafficking survivors, many of them were forced to make pornography. So they were actually being featured in pornography. Trafficking victims were being featured in pornography. So that was a second overlapping issue. The third was that in talking to the Johns, the sex buyers, if you will, which I don't have great language for this yet. I don't like calling them sex buyers because I don't think of sex as a disembodied commodity. You know, like, oh, I went to the store and I bought sugar and cereal and sex. It's like, no, this actually integrated into a person's humanity. So I think of it more as like people who rent women's bodies to masturbate into. But anyway, for lack of a better terminology at this point, I'll just say sex buyer. We interviewed dozens of them, and all of them had a history of pornography use. So every single one of them had a history of pornography use from childhood. And that over years ultimately cultivated in them the demand for illicit sex, this insatiable thirst to act out their fantasies on women who would have no choice but to receive their own offloaded existential depraved sexuality onto another person. The fourth area is that in investigating the porn industry itself, we began to see how coercion was the backdrop of the vast majority of mainstream pornography, where pornographers would lure women into sexual scenarios through bait and switch tactics that were coercive in nature. And so those four overlapping areas both awakened me to the understanding of pornography's role in this, and then later led to a more concrete decision to go on a journey of addressing pornography in a very specific and tangible way.
Man, that makes so much sense. It's so much more intertwined than I thought.
Yeah. It's all the whole global commercial sex industry is all deeply entwined. Prostitution, escorting, stripping, pornography. It's this intertwined, multi-billion dollar global industry that operates as a clandestine operation with no regulation under the banner of a cover narrative that says it's empowering and sexually liberating for the women while completely obscuring the role of men. So it's the ultimate extension of men's misogynistic, depraved, pornographic fueled worldview. An entity of women, a subclass of species who exists as nothing more than a receptacle for men's offloaded sexual perversity. These things are, these are intense kind of like aspects of our world that we don't often think about, look at, observe, wrestle with, discuss. So I'm aware that some of this may feel confrontational, like, oh my God, like, but it is the reality. It is the reality of our world. I mean, I have held the bloodstained pajamas of 7-year-old girls who were rescued out of a brothel. Like, I have held those pajamas and stared at the reality of the offloaded, abusive, violent sexuality of men onto little children in places on the other side of the world. And it's so real. So for me, staring at that, I go, that guy didn't wake up one day and decide to go fly halfway across the world to buy a child for sex and violently abuse her. Something happened in his life. So that's the whole issue of pornography, is you, when you hit that button, you do not know the ride that you're going to be taken on. And there's a question for us, just because of the vast scope and gravity of trafficking in our world, there's a question that we as men have to begin to ask ourselves, which is, where are we hitching our sexuality? What is the vision that we have for our life? Like, I have on my Instagram, live a great story. I want to continually remind myself of that because I'm aware of my own frailty and potential to be steered astray by my sexuality. Jesus said we struggle with two things, lust and anger. And 99% of humanity is derailed through one or the other, through bitterness and offense, or through lust and sexual immorality. So all this framing is really important in order for us as men to find our grounding and how we're going to live a great story.
Yeah. So while many of us don't think about this stuff, you think about it every day. And that's why I'm so grateful to be learning from you and with you in this moment. You talk about living a great story and being a modern day abolitionist, how we can not only stop contributing to the demand for porn, but also contribute to the abolition of it and take steps for ourselves. So what is that abolition model?
So the whole thing is, when it comes to the realm of abolition, like the kind of like the global confrontation of the system of oppression, I look at William Wilberforce as an inspiration and the blueprints that he laid out. Eric Metaxas said about William Wilberforce, the thing that made him the greatest social reformer in the history of the planet is not that he vanquished slavery, it's that he vanquished the mindset that permitted slavery for millennia. And so Wilberforce understood that in order to win the battle for abolition, they had to shift the locus of thought and the mass consciousness of society. So he spent 46 years campaigning, doing social campaigns to shift mindsets in order to pave the way for the passing of legislation that would bring about the abolition of slavery and the emancipation of slaves throughout the British Empire. So after he completed his life's work, Victor Hugo came along. He was writing Les Miserables in Paris, observing prostitution. He made this famous quote. He said, "We say that slavery has ended in European civilization, but this is not true. Slavery still exists, but now it applies only to women, and its name is prostitution." So he put his finger on this idea that men had given up their entitlement to subjugate, oppress, and exploit other men for financial gain, but they had not given up their entitlement to subjugate, oppress, and exploit women for sexual and financial gain. Fast forward 150 years to a world that had been modernized, technologized, globalization, travel around the world, and we see this explosion of pornography and this explosion of the demand for illicit sex and this explosion of the demand of the global commercial sex industry. So we are in a Wilberforce hour of history, where there's an invitation for us and a call upon this generation to be a part of reclaiming a mantle of social change, one in which we shift the locus of thought and the mass consciousness of society in order to pave the way for legislation that would eradicate the system of oppression that is currently enslaving millions of marginalized people, predominantly women and children around the world, for financial gain.
And I want to celebrate a little bit of that with you, because like there has been progress and victory stories. I'm thinking of the trafficking campaign last year.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, it's been amazing to see kind of this journey unfold as we've been on it. 2012, I pulled our team together. We had a discussion about addressing pornography based on our journey of making Nefarious for 4 years. We decided to address it from a public health and a human rights standpoint. So porn's impact on consumers, porn's impact on those who are used in pornography. And that set us on an 8-year journey, researching everything we could, going undercover into the porn industry. In 2012, we felt like it was the point at which to begin to disclose our findings. So one of my staff members, Lila, wrote a op-ed for the Washington Examiner called "It's Time to Shut Down Pornhub." The premise of the article was really to expose the way in which they're profiting from and enabling videos of real abuse, trafficking, rape, child sexual exploitation, all of this because of a lack of a moderator system, because of the user-based upload model that they had on their website, for a lot of reasons. That article went viral. And then we launched a petition out of that to shut them down and hold their executives accountable. That petition got over 2 million signatures. And then we decided to launch a short animated video to really trumpet what we were seeing, and a 2-minute video. That went viral. We got 33 million views, 34 million views across our social platforms. That then got the attention of Nick Kristof, who ended up writing an article called "The Children of Pornhub" for the New York Times. When that article came out, it put us in touch with the CEOs of major credit card companies, who then cut their ties from Pornhub and pulled out from Pornhub, the world's largest porn site. And then a series of lawsuits began to get filed against MindGeek, the parent company of Pornhub. MindGeek owns 90% of all online pornography, and Pornhub was sort of like the feather in their cap. It was the the brand that they were using as the flagship, the one to kind of spearhead this initiative to make porn a pop culture acceptable kind of brand. And so now there's an existential threat to MindGeek. These campaigns have been underway. We've seen a tremendous amount of success in addressing the fundamental issues with pornography. This past year, 2021, we started a campaign called Protect Children, Not Porn. And that one is focused on demanding that big tech and big porn be required to have age verification walls around the hosting and distributing of all pornographic content. And so currently the internet is a city without walls. Children are being inadvertently exposed to pornography by the droves. Their sexuality is being colonized by a handful of pornographers, you know, in the San Fernando Valley. And so it's time for us to address the systemic changes that need to happen on the internet in order to make it a safe place for children who go online for so many reasons, you know. And then we're about to launch a new campaign that is specifically aimed at the porn industry and bringing regulation into this multi-billion dollar unregulated industry that has shown no ability to self-regulate, police itself at all whatsoever. So this whole larger campaign we're calling Operation Rolling Thunder, because it's just coming in waves, addressing specific issues in specific ways with specific campaigns, documentaries. I'm about to release a book. So there's a lot of like tools and resources and things that we're putting out there that help spearhead these campaigns to hopefully catalyze and mobilize an army of people to become a part of this tribe to make a difference in the world.
I'm getting so fired up right now. It's incredible. So for somebody who is feeling like me right now, so motivated, so ready to join with Exodus Cry in this movement, what's our next step?
So the most recent film that we did is called Raised on Porn, which now has over 3 million views on YouTube, thousands of comments. It's just that film alone is creating a whole community unto itself just on YouTube. With all the people commenting, and it's been pretty amazing to see. So people can watch that film on our Magic Lantern Pictures YouTube channel, where we're releasing a lot of these films. Again, it's called Raised on Porn, and they can watch on our Magic Lantern Pictures YouTube channel. The call to action with that film is a petition that we're asking people to sign, where that we're ultimately going to bring to our nation's leaders to demand and insist on change, that these age verification walls be put in place. There's several other things as well. So in being a part of this community, people can watch the content, rate the content, share the content. Our success hinges on the larger tribe, the larger community of people who are participating with us. We feel like it's our job to go curate and to create this content, but then we want to give it to people for free to run with. So people can be part by watching, rating, commenting, sharing, and then signing the petition, and then contributing funds as well if people feel compelled to do so, so that we can keep making these films, keep launching these campaigns, keep driving for change. That's the most obvious way that just anybody can get involved. Beyond that, there are career opportunities in this space. We usually go through a hiring season twice a year where we're looking for people who are more, you know, technically savvy in some way, shape, or form, whether that be through accounting, filmmaking, marketing, writing, all kinds of different things. So there are opportunities for people who are looking for careers in this space as well.
Awesome. And together, we will slay the dragon.
Exactly. It's going to take a community. It's going to take a tribe. It's going to take an army to slay this dragon.
Yeah. And as you said, it's a campaign both within us and with us.
Exactly. It starts here and then it branches out from there in terms of family, friends, community. So what we're trying to provide through Exodus Cry is a spearhead to help pave a way for a larger army of people to enter into so we can push for this deep systemic change in our world. We're seeing the subterranean movements of a revolution. We're seeing the subterranean movements of an army rising up, demanding change, reaching for the gates of influence to bring about that change and to shift the tectonic plates of how our sexuality is able, you know, how pornography is able to be in the world. And it's so I'm optimistic and hopeful for our future, but we have a lot of work cut out for us.
Yeah. Benji, as you think about the moments when you realize, wow, like things really are changing, what's one victory story that comes to mind?
So there's like two things, right? So one is the larger meta-narrative changes, metaphysical changes, the larger, bigger picture kind of realities of our world. So I would see the past, like Sweden passing the abolition model of legislation as a major victory in this movement. It's a law that criminalizes the purchase of sex at a felony level offense, but decriminalizes the women and offers them programs and services. So it's a victim-centered approach to addressing the issue of global commercial sex, commercial sexual exploitation. So the felony level offense for buying sex creates a strong deterrent on the demand side, because we know that this whole global commercial sex industry would end, it would implode if there weren't men who were buying sex. The issue of sex trafficking would end today if men stopped buying sex. So this law has been very effective at eradicating sex trafficking in their country. That would be like a meta victory. And I would see the Trafficking Hub campaign. I forgot to mention, Pornhub deleted 80% of their website, the videos on their website, took down the download feature, among a bunch of other things. That's a massive victory. And so, so we're seeing victories at this meta level. And then there's victories from the standpoint of like the way we think about our work. You always have to, in this space, go micro lens, macro lens, micro lens, macro lens. If you stay in the micro lens too long, you could become fixated, it could become oppressive, and you could begin to feel overwhelmed by the burden of this. If you stay out in the macro lens too long, you begin to lose sight of the one. So for us, we're always trying to come in and out of that reality. Mother Teresa said, had I not picked up that one child in Calcutta, I never would have picked up the 40,000. So for us, there's the personal victories of having an impact in one person's life. And fortunately, we at Exodus Cry have been able to be a part of that in a number of different scenarios. One of the survivors that we helped, who was a part of the Trafficking Hub, was living in her car, her life very affected by drugs. We've been able to help her get back on her feet, get back into school, get a home under her roof, get free from drugs. So it's individual lives changed that are also like such an important part of what we would consider to be victories in this space. And then as we put out our films, people contact us all the time about how they've been personally set free from, you know, pornography consumption, different mindsets, et cetera, et cetera. And that's always like really encouraging to us. If somebody watches Nefarious or watches Raised on Porn and contacts us and shares a story of how it changed their personal life, like, we're really encouraged by that as well. So the work that's before us is both big and small. There's the battle, and then there's the war. There's the bigger kind of, you know, landscape. And I think that Wilberforce felt the same way. He said, if to be alive to the sufferings of my creatures is to be, as my fellow humans is to be a fanatic, I'm one of the most incurable fanatics ever to be permitted at large. His heart was alive to the sufferings of the reality of real humans. And he burned with passion to shift values in society and abolish slavery. And the abolition took shape through the one and also on a global scale. So so we've been encouraged by victories in both realms, but we're not content. We're not content until every person is free.
Man, that is so good. We are not content until every person is free. This concludes part one of my interview with Benji. We are going to come back next week talking more about his documentary, Raised by Porn, and how porn exploits children, boys and girls, from a young age, and what we can do about it. Until then, always remember, you are God's beloved son, in you, he is well pleased.